Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Mullen, joined by Lauren Gibbons and Craig Mauger. A little later, we're going to talk to Carla Swift. She's the president of the AFL-CIO. They've got a new mail program going out in which they're tying Republicans to ALEC and going after Terry Land and pumping up Mark Schauer. And it is ad season, isn't it, guys? So I don't think we could watch a football game over the weekend, Craig, without seeing a Land ad or a Peters ad or some kind of ad pop on the screen.
It's especially awesome when you see one ad for one candidate, and then right after that, you see an ad for the other candidate. It's just great.
This U.S. Senate race, I'm starting to wonder if the Republicans really think they can win this race, or if they're just spending money in this race so the Democrats will spend money in this race and keep the Democrats spending money here, as opposed to some of the other competitive districts where the Democrats need to win in order to maintain majority in the U.S. Senate. That's just a theory I got. I don't know. I mean, because you need one of these, like, black holes, you know, for the Democrats to suck money into. I'm wondering if this is it, or do the Republicans really think they got a shot of winning this thing?
I'm sure they think they have some shot of winning this thing, or they wouldn't be dumping this kind of money into it. But, I mean, how good of a shot that is, I guess that's what the question you're getting at is. But I also want to say that I've really enjoyed the Coke industry ads, not only the ones where, like, Peter's campaign or whoever is ripping them down and there's this plume of dark smoke coming at you, and then, like, the next ad, Coke Industries is creating jobs in America, and it's all great. It's awesome. I just don't know what to make of it all.
Lauren, what ad has stuck out to you so far?
You know, I have to go back to the beginning of the governor's race, the Snyder ad of him coming out of the swimming pool and scuba gear. If nothing else, it gave me a great mental image for his campaign.
Well, it's interesting you mention this because an hour or so ago, we started to compile our most memorable moments so far of the ad season. And obviously, we still got 6 weeks left or 5 weeks left, and we'll probably see more, and there may be a memorable moment yet. But that snorkel or whatever the heck he had as he popped out of the swimming pool is definitely on our list here of top five memorable moments. And let's go through a couple of these other ones here. Al-Qaeda's best friend. Remember that, Craig? That was a hit that was against Justin Amash by Brian Ellis that was so nasty that Justin Amash basically told Brian Ellis at the end of the campaign, go take a hike, buzz off. I don't want to hear from you anymore.
That was crazy. I remember reading some of the articles after that and just thinking, wow, you know, they didn't even get the concession call. He didn't take it.
That is truly the test of a great campaign ad. If you can use like four words and all of a sudden you remember it just like that. I don't know if it's a great campaign ad or a memorable campaign ad, I should say. But when you say Al-Qaeda's best friend, it takes you back to that moment when you watch that ad and you're like, whoa, really? He's a congressman. Are you sure that he's Al-Qaeda's best friend? Maybe it's someone in Al-Qaeda that is their best friend? I don't know.
Well, and so that's why that's a most memorable moment. We've got Snyder popping out of the swimming pool. How about, let's go early in the campaign, where we had Julie Boonstra saying that Obamacare was now totally unaffordable, quote, totally unaffordable. I put that on the list just because that was the ad that kept on giving for weeks. The media was trying to prove whether that was true or not. But in the meantime, AFP got a ton of coverage on that, Craig.
Yeah, there were a lot of stories written about the, you know, fact-checking that ad, and it was definitely one that got a lot of legs. And there was also that ad about the Wendt family, I think, out in the Grand Rapids area, and the Affordable Care Act was crushing this family. And
more recently, the Schauer campaign put out an ad, or I think this was a GGA spot, the one of Rocky.
Oh, yeah.
The former state employee tooling around on his lawnmower. I don't know why that ad sticks out to me so much, but it's just this guy just talking about how life blows, and then because now he has to pay the pension tax, and now he's scooting out of this very nice-looking garage in a riding lawnmower.
I mean, you don't think of politics and lawn mowing in the same frame. I guess that goes to the scuba Snyder thing as well. You don't think of a governor coming out of a pond or a lake in scuba gear.
Well, it makes me look at my own lawn and realize, oh, geez, I actually actually do got to mow, but it rained on Sunday.
So you think of Rocky every time you start your lawnmower. Is that fair to say?
No, I wouldn't say that. No, I don't have a riding lawnmower. My lawn isn't that big.
You wish you had that lawnmower.
No, I know I don't. Because you know what? I couldn't even mow my lawn with that lawnmower. It's so darn big.
It would be pretty silly for me, too, to have a lawnmower that size.
Yeah, I think my lawn is about the size of this room
here. Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
Here's one of my more favorable ads, and it ended up getting like $2 put into it, and I don't know if more than 20 people saw it.
Oh.
But the Trot Foreclosure King ad put out by that goofy outfit supporting Carrie Benevolio had an entertainment value of 10, even though I don't think anybody saw that thing.
Yeah, apparently you did. I mean, you're responsible for half the YouTube clips.
I mean, the comics involved in it and the buffoonery was so hilarious that it's just got to make the list. It has to make the list. And it didn't sway the election one way.
That's shocking, yeah. Well, shocking it didn't have more of an impact.
Well, right. We should see more of the Shady Bunch.
Oh, jeez, the Shady Bunch. I wish I would see that on TV. I don't know if I ever will, but
I don't think you will.
It was really catchy. It was really catchy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that's TV worthy or not. It's YouTube worthy, though.
It is definitely YouTube.
No, that's one thing that I think we've definitely learned this election cycle is that there's someone over at Michigan Republican Party who has some musical talent and is putting it to use in these clips. We have learned that.
Maybe we should do a behind the scenes.
Who is this person? Who is the Shady Bunch?
Who's the person singing the Shady Bunch? Because that is definitely an interesting question. Whenever I try to go watch a YouTube video, I am getting a lot of political ads on YouTube as well. And I would see them before this cycle. I've seen them before. But, you know, this time around, it's like every time I go to watch a popular YouTube video, it's either a Shower or Snyder ad. And I think that's pretty relevant. You know, they're really trying to get that market, too.
You're being micro-targeted.
I guess so.
Okay, so let's talk about the most memorable ad so far this election season, and it's the one that was panned by Frank Luntz as the worst ad of the political process. That was 12 minutes of Terry Lamb looking at a camera.
12 seconds, right?
It was 12 seconds of Terry Lamb. It felt like 12 minutes, though, didn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, maybe she wasn't as uncomfortable as I was. But. You know, at the time, though, when we watched the first time, it seemed like, well, it's a risky maneuver, and maybe there's something to that. But as time has gone on, that has been the ad that's gotten panned the most, it seems like.
It seems so long ago when that came out, doesn't it?
I mean,
we've seen so many Pet Coke ads in the time between now and when we saw that ad. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
That ad, though, was a defining ad because it seemed like immediately after that ad went up, the race kind of flipped. Because at one point, it was Terry Land up by 3, 4, 2 points. And then after that ad, it seemed like the dynamic switched. And now it was Gary Peters up 2, 4, 5 points. And now we've seen that, what is it, the last 23 polls that have been taken on this U.S. Senate race, only 2, maybe 3 have been in Land's favor since then. It was a dynamic shift, and I think that's what has made it memorable.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, too, because we've talked about this in the office, that a lot of these ads are the same old mold, the candidate standing in front of a video camera talking about outsourcing or talking about the jobs he's created or whatever. And maybe that's the reason, because when you do something outside the box like that Land ad, it's a huge risk.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the reason that we don't have more kind of interesting ads. I don't know.
You know what? There are two other ads that we didn't talk about. This last one we saw, Jerry Cannon comparing him to an ostrich, I thought was pretty hilarious.
Yeah. That kind of got outside the mold a little bit.
But I think they could probably take Jerry Cannon out and put
anyone in.
Yeah, because that was a National Republican Congressional Committee.
It was entertaining, though.
Oh, no, it was very entertaining.
Yeah, definitely.
Did you see, Lauren, did you see any of the Paul Mitchell ads where he was playing his 40?
Oh,
thank you.
I did.
And shooting the crossbow?
Yeah, I thought that was pretty interesting, for sure. It's so many talents. Like,
when we talk about this accordion thing, I think maybe an accordion-based theme song for the podcast should be something that we look into.
Well, you
I'm
know
just
what?
Throwing
yeah.
that out there now that you've
we,
mentioned
we
it.
Could go, we could go to Oktoberfest and take some recordings of all of the...
All, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's after we get Michael Gerstein's...
Oh, yeah, we're still waiting on that.
Oh, yeah, right. Gerstein's going to publish an intro for us here.
Is he really?
I think we mentioned it to him. Did he say he was doing that?
No, I don't think so. But we mentioned it many times.
Do we have a MERS theme song? Is he going to create a MERS theme song?
Maybe we should talk to the Republican Party who did the Brady Bunch, or the Shady Bunch.
Oh, God, what would they say about us?
That's a good point. Yeah, maybe we don't want to do that.
Maybe someone else.
Well, maybe we should go into the interview portion of this podcast now and talk with Carlos Swift from the AFL-CIO.
Joining me on the other end of the line is Carlos Swift, president of the AFL-CIO. President, thanks for joining us on the podcast today.
Thank you, Kyle. Thanks for having me.
Well, we see that the AFL-CIO is launching its 2014 campaign mail program supporting Mark Schauer and hitting Terry Land for failing to support equal pay. In total, it looks like you guys have four individual mail pieces that are going out. Talk about the strategy here in doing a positive mail piece for Mark Schauer and going negative on Terry Land.
Well, you know, Kyle, this election really is about organized people versus organized money, and our grassroots program is a combination of mail and door-to-door canvassing and phone banking and conversations and work sites, the member-to-member kinds of conversations. Our experience is that working people are very interested in what their fellow union members have to say about key issues during their election campaigns, and we're trying to make sure that we are supporting those conversations that are going on inside the workplaces and on the doors and on the phones with, you know, clear sets of facts about the candidates. So in the case of the governor's race, Rick Snyder's failed policies of raising taxes on the middle class is hurting Michigan families and hurting Michigan workers. We're 47th in the nation in current jobs with the third highest unemployment rate, and 49th in the nation in future job creation. And people are pretty clear about those things. They're talking about those things day in and day out. It's a stark contrast to the record of Mark Schauer. So the Terry Lynn Land side, Gary Peters side, Terry Lynn Land is taking money from wealthy corporate interests, and she's not standing up for Michigan families or Michigan women. So, you know, our endorsed candidates, Mark Schauer and Gary Peters, are fighters for the middle class. They've had a strong record of standing up for middle-class jobs in our auto industry and holding companies accountable when they're shipping jobs overseas and fighting for tax breaks for middle-class and not rich CEOs.
You know what I thought was really interesting? One of the mail pieces that you guys did here was a hit piece on Alex, which we know here in Lansing as the American Legislative Exchange, and obviously kind of a think tank for Republicans across the country. Talk about bringing that out in a mail piece.
Well, again, it's the organized people versus organized money, and that's really what this election is about. It's no longer just a case of one political party against another political party. It is, on the organized money side, people like the Koch brothers and the American Legislative Exchange Council that takes legislators off to fancy resorts and wines and dines them and then gives them model pieces of legislation for them to take back and pass in their legislative roles. That is something that people need to understand and people need to know about. It's something that is of great interest to union members. Those are the part of the conversations, again, that have been taking place between union members and others in, you know, sort of the working families areas of our state for a long time now. Is how did we get this crazy set of legislation that was never on the radar screen and not important to regular working people, yet it seems so important to some of these legislators? And Terry Lynn Land has taken a lot of money from the folks that are on the organized money side of the equation. And so you got to ask, who is she working for?
In Michigan and across the country as well, and these off presidential elections, we see fall off from Democratic supporters and folks who otherwise would vote for Democrats. What are you guys doing to try and change that and get as many Democratic voters out as possible in this 2014 election? Are you having a problem getting people excited?
Actually, this is a very exciting election cycle, and that gets directly to the organized people part of this election cycle, which is regular, everyday working people who are volunteering around the state in one of many volunteer centers. We now have about 15 volunteer centers set up across the state, and we'll probably end up somewhere in the 25 to 30 range of volunteer centers where people can go. They can sign in, they can pick up a door-to-door walk packet, they can go out, they can spend a couple of hours knocking on doors, talking to neighbors and coworkers in their household. They can sign up and do a phone shift and spend a couple hours phone banking. And so that's the, there is a lot of excitement. We're seeing a lot of volunteers, and it's growing sort of exponentially at this point. You know, September is the time when people start to really pay attention, and we're seeing a huge leap in the number of volunteers that are coming into the volunteer centers every week that goes by now.
Is it a number that you can compare to years past, 2012 or 2010?
I'm not sure I've got accurate numbers to compare. I can say that this year in 2014, we have the probably biggest, most robust labor program that I can remember in Michigan.
2012, we had all the ballot proposals on, and labor had a very important ballot proposal on in Proposal 2, and that didn't pass. Have people recovered from that and the fact that that wasn't successful and it kind of took the wind out of your sails and then you had Right to Work kind of shoved on you? Have people recovered from that and excited and thinking that this could be a year where labor flexes its muscles a little bit more?
Well, I think that 2012 was a important political year for us, but I think it's important to remember that we're in a sort of a long-term struggle, Kyle. It's not a one-time event kind of a thing when working people are struggling to stand up for themselves. And I think that what we learned in 2012 and what we achieved in 2012 was an enormous mobilization of working people to stand up for themselves, to come out and vote overwhelmingly for a president that cared about what's good for working people, that the confusion on the ballot around the ballot proposals should not be misconstrued as something that really set us back. I think what it was a building block in the movement, and we're reaping the benefits of that building block right now. I think what people have not recovered from are Snyder's failed policies of cutting cutting funding to our schools and hiking taxes on the middle class and giving big tax breaks to CEOs and corporations and all of that. And now we've got still 50 school districts with budget deficits. We're still 47th in the nation in current jobs, meaning having enough jobs for the people who want to work. We've got the third highest unemployment in the nation, and we're 49th in future job creation. So I think that's what people have not recovered from in what's important about this election cycle.
Just one more question here. Rich Baird, who is the governor's right-hand man, obviously took exception to your op-ed that was posted around Labor Day concerning his taking of the personal primary exemption for his home here in Bath Township. And he threatened to sue you. I was curious if you've heard anything more from that, if there's any been follow-up of any sort from him. And did you have any thoughts of retracting anything from your column?
I sent him back a letter, and I think you probably have a copy of that letter, which says we have no intention of retracting my opinion. But I tell you what, there are some new sort of developments around the Baird story, and what is new is that there's more and more scandals, there's more questionable behavior, there's more conflicts of interest in the Snyder administration. Just last week, we learned about the canceled fine against Aramark, despite their employees smuggling drugs into the prisons and serving food with maggots to inmates. We learned more about the resigned MSHTA chief, Scott Woosley, who was eating filet mignon on the taxpayer's dime, but he was also giving taxpayer money to his own private company. We just learned that last week. So that's new. You know, Rich Baird took the whole issue very personally, as if it was all about him. And it's not about him. It's about responsibilities and his responsibilities as a public official. This administration raised taxes on workers, on parents, on retirees, $1.4 billion in tax increases on individuals, and $1.8 billion in tax cuts for rich CEOs and wealthy corporations. In that context, with that background, I think it's very significant that a top official of the Snyder administration didn't pay his own taxes in full and on time. So that's, you know, that seems to be where that story stands right now on Rich Baird. But the real story is that people are feeling now the effect of Snyder's failed policies. Retirees are feeling the new pension tax. Parents are feeling the loss of the tax credit for their children. Everyone in the state is feeling the higher income tax. And people aren't willing to wait to feel better. They want results, and they feel like there's been plenty of time to right the ship in Michigan. They see that Snyder's policies are failing them. And so for all of those higher taxes, what did we get? Did we get better schools? Not really. Did we get better roads? No. Do we have more jobs? No. So the issue with Rich Baird is not about him. It's about Rick Snyder's failed policies.
Very good. Carla Swift, president of the AFL-CIO, thanks for joining us on the podcast this week.
Thank you, Kyle.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. Thanks to Craig and Lauren and Roger Kirsten for hooking us up with Carla Swift, and Carla Swift as well for taking some time and speaking with us, and the Michigan Press Association for sending this out far and wide. And thank you for listening to the podcast. You know, Lauren, just so you know here, if you ever need to keep any food in the refrigerator because you're afraid somebody at your house is going to steal your food. I won't steal your food.
You know, I'm a little nervous now. My roommate does have a little bit of the thievery problem with when it comes to my eats here.
Who would do that?
My roommate.
Would you ever think of like eating somebody else's like that's pretty bold, isn't it?
I would see oh yeah, if you need milk or an egg or something. But you know, you could just ask. If it, or like butter, you know, if it's something that you don't really want to run to the store for, then you could ask your roommate and be like, oh, roommate, you have milk. Can I use some? And
so that would be totally fine. Let's just briefly here, because I know we're running out of time, but you were in your house and you noticed that your roommate was eating your food in front of you.
I was in my kitchen. I was in my kitchen making dinner, and she got out some kind of frozen burrito that I had purchased. Yep, and that was that.
Yeah, that's
troubling.
That's bold. That's bold.
I'll have to play her this podcast.
We're gonna have to do a
further. It makes you wonder what else this person is doing if they're steeping to that. I don't know.
Burritos today.
Yeah.
What could possibly be for tomorrow?
I'm nervous to find out.
That's very troubling. We'll find out the rest of this exciting edition of the Lauren Missing Burritos in our next edition of the podcast, I promise. Until then, I'm Kyle Mullen. Take care.